It's time for Power Hour.
Blue 20!
Your number one source for year-round Fighting Irish recruiting news.
Hot rock!
A premium subscription is just a click away at irishsportsdaily.com. And now,
hot!
Your Power Hour host.
He's good.
I love him.
Mike Frank.
All right, folks, welcome once again, everybody, to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank. We've got a special show lined up for today. We're going to have a couple interviews I think you're going to really like. We're going to take a look at some of Notre Dame's future opponents and discuss that. But before we get going, I wanted to mention a couple things. Still a great time to sign up for irishsportsdaily.com. You can go to the front page there, click on the subscribe section, and sign up. Lots of action going to be happening right now. There's some commitments could possibly be coming. A lot of guys have mentioned, and they're thinking about making a decision here fairly soon. So we'll have plenty of coverage of that. We have fall camp coming up. And, of course, we have summer, which is a lot of recruiting stuff. Of course, you have the football camps that happen. We have Irish Invasion, all that good stuff. And then, of course, the opening. A couple Irish players just got invited to the opening over the weekend. So lots of good stuff happening. If you wanted to sign up for Irish Sports Daily, go ahead. Also, if you have any questions about the show, you can email me at mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. And again, if you want to advertise on the podcast, you can contact me that way. Again, mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. I can give you details on ad rates and downloads, all that kind of stuff. Tell you what, folks, we're going to kick off the show today. We're going to talk to Kyle Austin, who is from MLive.com. He follows Michigan State football and talk about two programs that had a down year last year. Obviously, the Spartans and the Irish did not have the best year. And so we're going to talk to Kyle. Kyle, thanks for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate it.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, it's kind of weird that both programs had such a difficult year. For Mark D'Antonio, things have been really kind of difficult even after the year. Kind of a really 9 months of just kind of misery. What has his demeanor been like? Some people have speculated maybe he wanted to retire, getting kind of frustrated with it. What's his demeanor been like so far?
Well, it's been hard for us to tell, frankly, because we haven't seen him very much. Michigan State took the pretty unorthodox step of essentially closing its entire spring practice to the media. Mm-hmm. They didn't hold any player availabilities throughout all their 15 practices. Mark D'Antonio only held one press conference during that time, during which he addressed some of the sexual assault allegations against his program. But for the most part, I think his response has been kind of to turn inward and to kind of keep everything within his program. Obviously, there's not a lot of things he can talk about, but that's kind of his MO. You know, he doesn't like being very public. He doesn't like doing a lot of media. And I think especially now that the news is bad, he'd rather just kind of keep the focus inward with his team. So we haven't seen him a lot. I mean, obviously, he's not pleased. He's disappointed past the 3-9 season. He's certainly disappointed in a lot of his players that put themselves in these positions. Just for background, if your listeners don't know, as of early May, three Michigan State players are still under investigation for sexual assault. And one of his staff members is actually suspended as part of that investigation. And that's been ongoing for about 3 months. So it's kind of just been a cloud over the program. And then separately, they actually had a fourth player who was kicked off the team. He's actually been charged with third-degree sexual assault. So it's been a lot to deal with. I mean, I think they already were not looking forward to this offseason after 3-9. But you add it all together, and it's certainly a different feel for Mark D'Antonio. I mean, 18 months ago, he was coming off the college football playoff. He had this program riding as high as it ever has been. And it's been a pretty stark reversal since then.
Obviously, there's some big names that were kind of thrown around. And again, I don't know whether these are true, you know, and I'm not going to really get into the names because I think you're kind of convicting people before. But just based off of your discovery, do you think those names are legit, or do you think people really don't know what the situation is at this point?
You know, I've seen places on the internet that have the correct names, and I've seen places that don't. At MLive.com, our policy has been to not name suspects of an ongoing investigation in sexual assault. And that's been true for all of the all the media up here. But it's been going on for so long. I think most people have a good sense of the names by now, even though they haven't been made public. So it's kind of an open secret, I guess you could call up in East Lansing. And the strange part was that Michigan State held its spring game with three unnamed suspended players. So obviously they had their whole team out there. People could look at their rosters and figure out who wasn't there. There are a couple guys that were suspended for other reasons, but basically the one time this offseason we've seen Michigan State play in a public venue, that kind of let the cat out of the bag a little bit as far as who these guys are. So I think for everybody's sake, people are hoping that this gets wrapped up. This investigation gets wrapped up here in the next couple of weeks and everybody can move forward in whatever way that is. But until then, this whole program's kind of been waiting for the other shoe to drop, as it were, since January.
Yeah, I know it's hard to anticipate what may happen, but do you have any indication? I mean, do you think that this may just go away? Do you think there could be some serious ramifications from all of this?
Well, it could certainly go away. I mean, a lot of people have speculated that since, it's been a 3-month investigation, that's an indication that, maybe this isn't the strongest case. I'm not sure that's a conclusion I'm willing to reach, but it is certainly possible that they could go through all this and decide, yeah, we don't have enough evidence to make a case here and drop it. And then, these three would be free to return. They would return under a little bit different circumstances, even if they weren't charged. The aspect of this case that I'm really interested in is the Michigan State staffer's involvement. The staffer that's been suspended is Curtis Blackwell. He's the recruiting director. He's a guy that's very close to Mark D'Antonio, and he's been key in getting a lot of recruits on campus. He came in about 3 years ago and kind of overhauled their recruiting efforts, and he's been behind a lot of the success that they've had the last couple of years when they've been at their highest. And there's been no word as to exactly what his involvement was. I mean, he was not involved in the act itself, but what his involvement, why he was suspended as a result of this investigation. But if he, at all obstructed the investigation or did anything that to hamper what the police were doing, to me, that's something that's going to cause a lot of questions for Mark D'Antonio. It's going to be something that's ongoing. So outside of the three players, I think something that could affect the program at large even more is any staff involvement and what could happen there.
All right. Once again, folks, we're talking to Kyle Austin from MLive.com. If you want to follow Michigan State and what's going on, although it doesn't sound like D'Antonio has given you much of a chance to do that lately. But, as the season gets near, make sure you stop by MLive.com and look at Kyle's stuff. He does a great job of following Michigan State. Let's move on to the team. Enough about that. Obviously, kind of uncharacteristic season for MSU last year. Notre Dame had a similar situation, and I think we have a pulse of what maybe some of the problems were. What about Michigan State? Do you have any idea what kind of the main problem was there with the team last year?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of different things. It's funny, we had that great game in November you played in South Bend, and everyone thought it was such a great game, and then, go see what happens to both those teams. It was kind of striking to see both of them have kind of similar downfalls last year. But, I think Michigan State, the biggest thing I look at is that they just did not get the kind of production out of their seniors that they have gotten. You look at what Mark D'Antonio has been able to do in 2013, 2014, 2015. His kind of whole MO has been to take these kind of under-recruited, 3-star type players, bring them into the program, redshirt them, bring them along slowly. And then after 2, 3, 4 years in the program, they're ready to really contribute, and they rely a lot on that experience, and they rely a lot on their age being an older team. And that's really been a lot of their successes, just having these class after class of veteran guys that have been in the program a lot, and they don't make a lot of mistakes. They might not be the most talented guys in the world, but they're very solid. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They don't beat you. They don't beat themselves, that is. So I think last year they, whether, you know, it was just a down recruiting class that, that came through and matured, or if they just didn't get developed in the same way. But for whatever reason, their seniors that they were counting on to really step up and to keep things moving, a lot of those guys just really didn't get the job done. I mean, quarterbacks get more than their share of the blame. But you know, Tyler O'Connor, he's the guy that stepped in at quarterback. He stepped in for the departed Connor Cook. He's a guy that had been in the program for a while and had played not that much. You know, he wasn't terrible. He had some offensive line issues in front of him, and other sorts of issues, but he certainly was a significant step back from Connor Cook, as we expected. Had some new guys on both sides of the lines that that just really could not fill the shoes of the guys in front of them. And then I think in this, you know, maybe this happened to Notre Dame too. I would think it probably did, but as it goes on, I think the issues can kind of compound by themselves. You know, you heard guys talk about locker room divisions, guys not getting along as well as they should have, maybe not as good of senior leadership as they've had in the past. So it's a lot of different things, but the biggest thing I look at is they just did not have the senior class that they've had, and I think they're going to have to work to get the senior talent that they need back in this program.
Yeah, that's absolutely what it was, I think, with Notre Dame too, is just senior leadership guys, you know, kind of steadying the ship when things were going bad. Same thing with Notre Dame. What has D'Antonio done in the offseason to kind of rectify those problems? Was there a lot of coaching changes? Was there, has he done anything? Again, it might be hard for you to really say because he's not giving you a lot of access, but just curious if you have any thoughts on that.
You know, the coaching change is interesting because he made no coaching changes. He kept his entire staff in place. He made one pretty minor change as far as responsibilities. He had a co-linebackers coach start coaching defensive ends. But beyond that, pretty much everything stays the same. And that's rubbed a lot of fans that I've talked to the wrong way, who felt like a 3-9 season really, there's no other choice after a 3-9 season but to make some changes. But I think Mark D'Antonio's attitude when he was asked about this was, hey, we had a lot of success under the staff, and I'm not going to throw the water out just because we had one bad season. He's a very loyal guy to his assistants. And I think he wants to give them another chance to write it. And he felt like these guys were kind of, he's had most of his staff. There's obviously been some changes, but he's had a pretty big chunk of his core staff, in place really from day one, 10 seasons here at Michigan State. So I think he felt like these guys really built this program up, and he felt like he wanted to have the same guys around to do it again. Which is, I think, a unique move in college football these days. And because I know, obviously, at Notre Dame, they kind of went the other way with a couple changes. But it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out because while, you know, Mark D'Antonio has certainly earned the right to make his own decisions around here, given what he's accomplished, if things continue to go badly, I think that's going to cause even more heat. I think he could have probably bought himself more time if he would have changed, you know, an offensive coordinator or changed a couple more assistants. I think people would have been a little more okay with some bumps next year. But I think if 2017, if things don't go well, I think a lot of people are going to be pointing to his decision to keep all these assistants is one of the issues going forward. So pretty much for the most part, that's kind of indicative of Mark D'Antonio's kind of philosophy overall. I think he feels like that he's really been the only guy that's won at that level at Michigan State and that he deserves to do it his way. And I think he's getting the chance right now, you know, to write things the way he wants to. You know, things continue to go badly, I think he's going to have to do something he doesn't want to. But I think right now, I think he feels like he knows the game plan and he's going to do what he wants to do.
All right, with all the turmoil, and again, you haven't had a chance to really talk to any of the players, but you kind of hear some stuff leak out, you know, from at least we do, you know, as far as what's going on. I mean, what's the team mood like? You got any sense of that right now?
You know, we did get a chance actually recently, finally, to talk to some guys, and, you know, they were very humbled by 3-9. You know, the guys, especially the older guys, they were used to stepping on the field and pretty much getting 10 wins automatically every year. And I think they kind of realized that, hey, you got to work at this. And not that they weren't working somewhat before, but you hear them talking about how winter conditioning workouts went differently. There was a little bit more intensity, and I think they kind of rededicated themselves to what this program's about. You know, a program that's built on a lot of hard work and a lot of guys that, you know, not a whole lot of 4- and 5-star recruits, but a lot of guys that come in and work hard and kind of prove their mettle. And you know, obviously, as far as on the field, a program that's built that, you know, winning along the lines in the trenches, establishing the run, kind of old school things like that. I think they kind of started reminding themselves what that was all about, because, I mean, I don't want to say this program got on cruise control or anything like that, but I think any time you have any sustained success like that, that's something you have to guard against. And they got to the point where they had so many good seasons in a row. They were bringing in guys that's all they knew. Is this team that was flying high and this team that was winning 10 games every year. So I think they had kind of forgotten a little bit, just kind of the struggle to get to that point. And I think that's what they've been reminded. And I think they're coming back fresh. And, you know, you hear a lot of things that I think you hear out of a team that's been struggling, you know, as far as, you know, we've been working harder, they've been more focused. But guys also talked about coming together more, finding better leadership, breaking down some of the divisions that they've had. So we'll see. I mean, I think they're saying the right things for right now. I think they're saying a lot of things that fans want to hear. But we'll see really how that manifests once they get to the season here in September.
All right, taking a look at the team itself, I did some research. I don't know how accurate it is. You know how the internet is. Michigan State looks like they only have 4 starters returning on defense. Is that correct? And who's back? What do they play? That type of thing.
Yeah, I don't have the whole depth chart in front of me, but they did lose a lot on defense. Malik McDowell will be the biggest one. He's the guy that just went 2nd round in the NFL draft. he was the guy that really anchored their defensive line. So he's gone. Riley Bulla, middle linebacker, 2-year starter, a middle linebacker and a familiar name for anyone in college football. He's gone. Lost both starting safeties, a corner. It's hard to say they really have a key returner if they have a group that struggled that much last year. They also lost a John Reschke linebacker who had to leave after an off-field incident in which he had an altercation with a teammate. As far as key guys back, Chris Fry would probably be the biggest one. He's a starting linebacker who's back, was one of their bright spots last year. So I think he'll be one of the leaders on that defense. and really that's about it. I mean, as far as key guys that are back, they've really kind of had to rebuild their defensive lines a couple of times. They've got a couple young guys in there that did pretty well. Demetrius Cooper, I guess, is another returning veteran, I should mention, a defensive end who played a lot last year. Didn't quite play up to expectations, but is a guy that has a lot of experience. So he's another returning starter. And you know, it's hard to even name returning starters on this team, to be honest with you, because Michigan State had different starting 11 in every game last year on both offense and defense, if that gives you a little sense of just how much they were searching for the right personnel and the right combinations and how much guys were in and out of there with injuries and whatnot. So I would say those two guys are the key guys back on defense, and then a lot of some guys that look good as freshmen and I think have potential, but are still going to have some growing pains for this defense. So I think it'll get better. I think they kind of took the biggest lumps last year, putting a lot of young guys in there. And I think a lot of those guys are going to be better this year. But as far as a defense that's going to be like some of the ones that Michigan State had, in 2013 or 2015, it's still going to be a little while, I think, before they can get back to that level.
Any great pass rushers on this group? Anybody that you think that you got to worry about?
No, to be completely honest with you. They finished, I think, with 10 sacks total last year. It was just a shockingly low number. And that if I had to listen, there were a ton of things that went wrong with this team last year. But if pass rush isn't number one on that list, it was 1A. They lost Chalik Calhoun, who was a great pass rusher, and they had a couple more pass rushers over the years. And, you know, I talked earlier about guys just stepping in and not being able to fill those roles. That was the most distinct place as far as a pass rush. Opposing teams really just had forever to pick apart that defense and really did not get pressured very much. Demetrius Cooper, the guy I mentioned, he'll be a senior next year. He's a guy that I think could be a lot better than he was last year. So he's probably their best chance to be a really good pass rusher next year. But and they'll have some younger guys inside that I think could help them out a little bit. But it's going to be a struggle for them again, I think, and I think they're still going to be searching to find some guys that can do that.
All right, Michigan State has what appears to be five offensive players, but as you said, it's kind of hard to know who that is. Let's start with O-line, a lot back. I know you said they struggled too last year, but is there a lot back on offensive line?
No, that's going to be pretty rebuilt too. And it's funny because I keep saying that they got a bunch of new guys. They don't have guys back, but when you're 3-9, I'm not sure that's necessarily such a bad thing. So the big guy in the offensive line is going to be Brian Allen. He's a 2-year starter who's coming back. He's probably going to move from guard to center this year. And he's going to be key, not only in being one of the better blockers in the Big Ten, which I think he can be. The younger brother of Jack Allen, if you remember Jack, a former All-American the last couple of years. Brian Allen, I think, can both, if they're going to be good, I think Brian Allen can both be one of the better blockers in the Big Ten, and I think he needs to keep a young group all on the same page, make sure everybody knows their assignments, and make sure everyone's kind of working in sync from that center position. But past that, you know, it's going to be some new faces. They got a guy named Cole Chewins, who's probably going to be their left tackle. He started a couple games at the end of last year and kind of came on pretty strong. He's actually a former walk-on, former gray shirt. So not a very heralded guy, but a guy that's put on a lot of weight, and I think they feel like could be good from them. Beyond that, you know, it's going to be some more new names. A guy named Luke Campbell, a guy from Ohio, another 3-star who's never played but is slated in as the right tackle, and a couple other young guys. So it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to have a lot of work to do there. But I think they feel like they've got young talent that it's just going to be about how quickly that they can get better.
What about quarterback situation? Who do you think will end up winning that one when it's all said and done?
It should be Brian Lewerke. It would be pretty surprising if it wasn't. Brian Lewerke played 4 games last year as a redshirt freshman. Kind of came on once Tyler O'Connor got pretty shaky there midseason and looked like a freshman a lot of times. I mean, he certainly didn't blow the doors off, but he was pretty solid, and you could see the improvement game to game from 4 games. He got more comfortable. He started making his reads a little bit better. And when he had time, which didn't always happen on behind that offensive line, but when he had time and had an open guy, he's got a pretty good arm. And I think they're pretty happy with him. He actually ended up breaking his leg against Michigan, got tackled by Jabril Peppers right at the end of that game, and fractured his femur. So that kind of ended it, which was a bummer for him because he would have had basically 4 games down the stretch there where he would have started and got a lot of experience. But I think Michigan State was still pretty happy with what he was able to do in 4 games. Mark Antonio actually came out after the season and called him the front runner. And then after spring, after seeing what he did, I think they were pretty impressed with him again. And he said he's still the front runner. So I would be pretty shocked if anyone overtook him. Damian Terry is a senior who's been in the program for a while, but has struggled to stay healthy and has never really been able to be very consistent for them. So he'd be the best other bet. But I think Brian Lewerke, sophomore from Arizona, I think is probably going to be your starter on day one.
All right. Skilled talent, what do you think they have coming back? And again, I think investigation-wise, that may impact it when it's all said and done, if, you know, something were to happen in that. But what do you think skilled talent-wise is the situation?
You know, they've got, again, more young talent. I mean, I think the most talented guy they have on the team is LJ Scott. Running back, a guy in Michigan State's running back situation and how they've used them has been pretty aggravating to fans because LJ Scott's a 4-star guy, a guy that was one of the more heralded guys that they had coming in out of Ohio. And for whatever reason, Michigan State is has hesitated to kind of make him the featured back and to give him the lion's share, give him 25 carries a game and really turn him loose the way they did with Le'Veon Bell a couple years ago, who's a guy that LJ Scott's compared to often. They kind of keep doing this three-back rotation thing, Gerald Holmes being another key guy they use at tailback. But I think if they were to choose to really turn LJ Scott loose and really make him a true featured back, I think he could be one of the best backs in the Big Ten. And I think if he gets the blocking, I think he's a guy that they could rely on. And I think, especially if you're breaking any new quarterback, I think he could be pretty key for them. I mean, he's certainly got the talent, can run with both power, but he's pretty shifty too. So he's a key guy. And as far as pass catchers, they only have one receiver who's older than a sophomore. So they're incredibly young there. The guy that stood out most in spring was a guy named Tristan Jackson, a guy from Michigan, former quarterback, a big guy who can go up and get a ball. He looked like he was kind of Brian Lewerke's main target going through spring, and then they've honestly got a host of younger guys. I could name probably five or six for you. Any one of them could probably emerge to be key, and any one of them could probably be pretty quiet. So it's going to be a really kind of boom or bust for that group. And as you mentioned, there's a couple key guys there that their status is uncertain. So it's hard to talk about that right now with names, but a lot of talent, but it could also be a struggle for that group too, I think.
All right. What's the kicking situation for Michigan State next year? Punter, kicker, what's that situation?
Veteran punter and Jake Hartbarger. He's been pretty solid for them. He'll be in his third year. I think they're pretty happy about that. The kicker, they're going to have a new one. They're losing Michael Geiger, who was a four-year guy for them. And they're going to have a competition. They're bringing in a couple guys. Matt Coughlin is one of them. And a guy named Cole Hahn, who they actually just signed, is going to be their other one. So they could be pretty shaky from a kicking perspective, but they've had their issues there too the last couple of years. They really haven't had a dead-on kicker. So if they could find a steady guy that they can really count on, I think that'd be a plus for them.
All right. What do you think has been the main story around spring this year, you know, for Michigan State? What do you think has been the main story?
We talked a lot about the investigations at the outset, so I think that's probably been the main one. But as far as, you know, on the field, I still think it's going to be how a lot of these young guys are progressing. And are these guys going to be ready for the big time? Are they going to look like freshmen? Are they going to make a lot of the freshman mistakes? Or are they going to be able to use that spring to improve leaps and bounds and start to be a little bit more serviceable Big Ten players, whether it's on the offensive line, whether it's the defensive line. I think if we would have been allowed in, there would have been a lot of guys that I would have had circled on my roster thinking, okay, what's this guy look like? Is he going to look leaps and bounds better? Or is he going to look more like the scene that he did last year? Because that's going to be the key for this team. They're going to have so many young guys who are fairly talented. I mean, that's the thing. When Michigan State had these good seasons, they were actually able to bring in a little bit more talent than they had. So they've got guys that have a lot of potential in the program. I think the big question is just how quickly can these guys come along? Are they going to be ready as sophomores or juniors to really step in there and do the load? So I think that's going to be one of the biggest questions is how ready are these guys? They're going to be shoved in there or are they going to still struggle? And is Michigan State going to struggle as a result?
Okay. Last question for you. Hate to put you on the spot, Kyle, but what do you think? I mean, do you think they'll rebound this year? Do you think that they'll steady the ship? And I mean, you know, it sounds like 10 wins may be a stretch, but do you think a good 7, 8, 9 is a possibility?
You know, right now, my super early prediction, I've got them at 6 wins, 6-6. I think a bowl game, if we're being totally realistic, I think a bowl game should be the goal for this team. I know there are people that think this team could jump right back up to where they were. That's what they actually did that once. You know, the closest thing, other thing they've had to a down season under Mark D'Antonio was 2012. when they went 7-6, and right after that they went 13-1, went to the Rose Bowl, had their best season in decades. I don't see that again this year, just because I don't see enough veteran talent on this team, on this roster right now, to be able to do that. I think the best they can hope for is some incremental increases to have these young guys get better enough, make fewer mistakes out there, that they can start beating the Illinois of the world and the Marylands of the world that they couldn't beat last year. I still think they're going to struggle against teams like Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, some of the top teams in the Big Ten. Certainly Notre Dame, even though that's in East Lansing, I think that'll be a tough one for them. But I think if they're better enough, make fewer mistakes, able to beat some of the lower tier Big Ten teams, I think they can show that they're moving in the right direction. And I think it's this young core. So many of these guys that I mentioned to you are freshmen, sophomores. I think as that group gets older, then maybe in 2018, 2019, then I think the conversation to getting back towards 10 wins, I think we can have that conversation then. But I think next year is more about showing improvement, showing that they're going to get better from that 3-9 season. They're not going to stay down there. And that some of these young guys are going to be able to be the guys going forward. I think that's the key. So I'm sure there are some people hoping for 8, 9, 10 wins. I think six. I think if you're a Michigan State fan, you should be happy with 6. I think that shows you're moving in the right direction, at least.
All right, folks. Wanted to say thanks, Kyle. We appreciate you coming on. Once again, it's Kyle Austin at MLive.com. If you want to follow Michigan State football, check in with his content. He does a great job. Thanks for coming on the show, Kyle. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay, folks, we're back here with Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. My next guest is really one of the nation's best and top sports writers in the country. He writes for Sports Illustrated, and people will definitely recognize this name, Pete Thamel. Pete, thanks for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I know, Pete, obviously you've been a very busy guy with the NBA, or I'm not the NBA, but the NFL draft and all these types of things, but I wanted to kind of get into, I guess, your history. You know, when you were going through college and you were trying to figure out what you wanted to do, what was it about being a sports writer that really kind of drew you into this?
Well, I think it would really start with being a tremendously mediocre to below average athlete, and not really being able to average any of my very, very limited athleticism to any type of anything beyond to any sporting level of note. But I did always love sports, and I loved to read. And I ended up starting to write for my local paper when I was in high school, and I was the sports editor of my high school paper. And I enjoyed the mix of journalism and of writing and being around sports and talking to people about sports. That prompted me to fly to Syracuse to their journalism school, the Newhouse School. Still not quite sure how I got in, but I did. And my career kind of went from there. I was a sports editor, lucky enough to be the sports editor of the school paper at Syracuse, and then everything just kind of took off from there.
What was your first gig out of college? What was the first thing you took?
Well, in college, I was the sports editor of the Daily Orange of Syracuse for 3 years, which was an unbelievable experience. I really count that as my first job. It was every day. I covered college football. I was there the same 4 years as McNabb's. They were actually pretty good at the time, which made it a little more enjoyable to cover and exposed me to some different things like the Fiesta Bowl and the Orange Bowl. You know, big game that I really wasn't around. It might not have been around if I'd gone during a different era. And obviously covered some good college basketball while I was up there. So after that, I was really fortunate to get a job covering high schools at the Post Standard, the local paper there, for 3 years after. And I did high schools, and then I moved up, and I was kind of helped out on the Syracuse basketball beat. I was kind of like the number two guy on that beat.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty awesome. Now, can you think back to, you know, throughout your career, can you think back to really the first big major story you broke that you were a part of? Can you think back to that?
God, I didn't realize this was going to be about me. I don't know. In school, there were, they cut a bunch of sports, which was a really big story at the time. Syracuse made the Final Four in basketball during my freshman year, so that was obviously a big deal. There were your typical arrests of players and different things like that. That were just sort of become part of the job covering that kind of stuff. So I don't know if there was one huge gigantic story, but just rather you get exposed to a little bit of everything and you build it from there.
I guess you're just such a big national figure that I was just curious about you and your life as a journalist myself, how you got to the level that you were at. And obviously you're one of the more respected journalists that are out there. So one question I do have for you, and this is probably something that you've had to deal with a lot more than I have, and because you're on such a national stage, is kind of the hate mail and the mean tweets and all that kind of stuff. Is that hard for you to handle, all that?
I pretty much just try to block it all out. I know a lot of people, write people back and spar with people and all that, and I just kind of consider, this vitriol. I'm always happy to engage on an intellectual level. It's not just people who disagree or whatever, but people who call you names and do just whatever. I just block them, mute them, just send them away. Like, it's just too many people get too caught up in that. There's a real easy way to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Get rid of it.
Yeah, I hear you there. I think it's best not to even bother in engaging with them, because you're just going to cause more problems by doing that. Now, recently you landed a big story, a big interview with Brian Kelly, kind of the first real one where he kind of delved into, I guess, personal thoughts, personal opinions on how the season unfolded for Notre Dame last year. I just want to get, first of all, your overall impression of Brian Kelly.
Sure. So I've been lucky enough to know Brian for a long time, since he was the head coach at Cincinnati. I've always had a good relationship with him, and I've always found him to be very frank and upfront and honest. He's one of my favorite coaches to interview, just because I'm from Boston. Brian's from Boston. I live in Boston, I should say. Brian's from Boston. I'm from Western Mass, and I think we both have a little bit similar personalities. Wiseacre kind of sarcastic, and so I've always appreciated Brian's forthrightness, and I was at the NFL Combine, which was going to be close to the neighborhood, and I called Brian to see if he wanted to sit down and chat, and ended up being, as he usually is, really open and frank, and I thought it was a really interesting interview, and really appreciated Brian doing it. He was really open and honest, and we talked about yoga. I love yoga too, so that was a fun part of it. It was a guy who, to me, again, there's no optimism like spring optimism. That was even pre-spring optimism. But he was a guy who identified problems and aggressively attacked changing them and went through how he did it. And I appreciated his forthrightness and how he went about doing that and how he thought things maybe fell off the wheels a little bit and how he pointed the finger at himself and made personal changes and distinct severe programming.
Yeah, it was interesting because I think I've seen that too in covering him since then, is that he seems, I don't want to say he was arrogant before. I think to be a head coach, you got to have some sort of arrogance, but he seems a little more humbled and just kind of, just kind of trying to figure out what went wrong, and just a different person than I think I've ever seen him. He was a much different person this spring.
Yeah, I've never known Brian to be arrogant. I do think coaches change, and your record changes, and your perspective changes. And, there's a – I think he recognized the urgency that things needed to distinctly change to win. And, walking out of there reminded me of something a coach once told me. He went to take a job as an assistant coach at a program for a coach who was kind of on the decline. And if you let things slip by 5% every year, you wake up 5 years later and they're a mess. And I think there were just some little things that Brian got away from doing that maybe he did early in his career that he now realized he needs to reinvest back into. And then there were some things he needed to back out of. And ultimately, those jobs are very much CEO jobs. You have to you have to strategically decide where to invest your time and energy. And Brian's decision to me was to strategically invest his time and energy back in his team, building relationships with his team, bonding with his team, and into recruiting. And I think you'd know about the recruiting a lot more than I would, just in terms of the minutia of it. But it seems to have, the new staff has got new energy, and Brian's team's very engaged, and they really seem like they're doing a great job bringing in a great class for 18. So, again, the early results, you know, nobody's taking a snap. There's issues on the D-line. It's not perfect. But the early results seem to have engendered some optimism around the program.
Yeah, the one thing, you know, coaching here, I think one of the bright light is so bright that sometimes it tends to wear down on people. I think some Irish fans may have felt like Brian Kelly was just not enjoying this job. Did you get any sense of that when you spoke with him?
See, I have no feel for what, like, Notre Dame fans think. I just have no impulse or tenor on that. I'm sure they wanted to win, and I mean, no one wants to win, obviously, more than Brian does, and nobody feels the after effects of a season like that. But no, I have no feel for what you asked about.
Yeah, it was just interesting because I think a lot of fans felt like, gosh, he wasn't necessarily excited about the job. And again, I think some of that has to do with all the speculation that goes around. Is he looking for a job? Is he looking for an out? But for me, when I dealt with him this spring, I just saw a much different person, a much more focused person, and really a happier guy. He seemed to be much happier than I've seen him in a long time. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that and whether you saw the same type of thing.
I mean, I'm not in the business of psychoanalyzing these guys. You're around them a lot more than I was just in his office for a couple minutes, you know, in the spring. But Brian looks great. He was healthy. I was happy to see that. Always obviously want these guys to be in good physical condition. And he seemed energized and as locked in as I've ever seen him.
All right. Now, how do you think Notre Dame's going to rebound this year? You've kind of taken a look at a lot of teams across the country. What do you project for Notre Dame next season?
Well, it's so hard to tell. You know, you got so much new coaching staff, so there's going to be some schematic changes. You obviously have a new quarterback who's very talented but very young. You know, they're going to have to find an identity early on both sides of the ball, and that's going to be really interesting. And it's hard to project 12 games when you don't even know kind of what the team's going to look like, if you will. I think they have a great offensive line. They have very good tight ends. People are quietly optimistic about the quarterback because of his high talent level. And supposed to be a great kid, Winbush. But in terms of, you know, the schedule is obviously grueling. Right, you know, starting right with the opener at Temple. Temple's a very good program and a very good team. And then you go right on through with the typical gauntlet that Notre Dame plays. You know, I think the worry is going to be on that defensive front. That's, I think, going to be where the big concerns are. And, you know, it'll take some of Mike Elko's best creativity to see what he can come up with to get this defense aligned and energized. And, you know, I think there's been a push to go back to fundamentals during the spring and teaching, try to bring young players along faster. But it's just, boy, you know, sit around on, you know, May 1st trying to project a season in September with so many more variables is really difficult.
Yeah, I hear you. What about, do you have any thoughts on who you think is going to challenge for some playoff spots this year? Any teams that you think have a real good chance to get in the playoffs?
Well, you start with Alabama every year, right? That's usually a pretty safe bet.
Sure.
Florida State returns a whole bunch of talent. And you got to think Clemson is going to take a little dip without Watson as they figure out what they're going to do at quarterback. So, you know, the West Coast will be interesting. Washington lost a lot of players in the NFL, but Peterson is as good of a coach and talent developer as there is in the sport. I think he's going to, I think he's really going to have Washington on a high plane. I think USC will probably be favored out of the Pac-12. Sam Darnold is already the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick in the 18 draft. And then in the Midwest, Ohio State's loaded again. I think Michigan may dip a little. They lost, you know, obviously they had 11, 12 guys drafted, and they lost 17 starters. If they had 17 defensive starters, that'd be impressive.
Yeah.
Really unique defense by Don Brown. Yes, they, you know, they'll be good. And look, Penn State returns a boatload of talent. This is the first time James Franklin is really going to have an offensive line that they're going to consider an advantage there. And I think Saquon Barkley is a top five Heisman guy and the best back in the country. So, I mean, those right off the top of my head are, just a handful of your contenders. There'll be obviously a few more SEC schools. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Big 12 shut out of this thing again. That league is just taking a little bit of a dip. That's a very cursory, uneducated look around the country off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty fair. I think that those would be the teams I'd focus on as well. What do you think is the future of college football? Do you see super conferences coming? Do you think they'll expand the playoffs beyond four teams?
So those are kind of two separate questions. I do think eventually they'll expand the playoffs beyond four teams. Look, at the end of the day, every major decision in college football that's been made the last 30 years has been driven by two factors, money and cable dollars, right, which are basically money. But money and cable have been the two driving forces. Projecting too far ahead right now is a little bit risky because there's going to be a need for money because clearly, as we've seen with the very unfortunate circumstances with the personnel at ESPN, cord cutting is changing the paradigm right now, both of the media and inherently of college sports. So it'll be very interesting. The best harbinger to the future of what college football and sports are going to look like are going to be, oddly enough, the American Athletic Conference's rights to come up in 2020. That's the next major league or college league that has national following to go up for sale. They could re-up with ESPN, but does ESPN have the same kind of dollars it's been throwing around? Well, sure. Do more traditional cable networks maybe have big money? We don't know right now. But the big variables here that are almost necessary to keep the money flowing into college sports are going to be the Amazons, Netflix, Hulus, Snapchats, people even have thrown in that group, Facebook. Are new media going to invest in live sports? And that question is going to be the biggest question hanging over the industry of college sports in the next decade, because once the American goes, I think it's the Big Ten next, and then a couple of other of these will go pretty fast from there. And it will be really compelling to see what it looks like as it's becoming apparent that that the sort of endless flow of cash from ESPN and Disney and from cable is drying up a little bit.
Oh, there's no question, and I think our industry is changing a tremendous amount. This is going to be very interesting to see what happens in the next 4 or 5 years just in our industry, the online stuff. I think kids and people's attention spans are so short that it's really hard to get your word out, get your message out as a sports writer and get people to read it and more or less pay for it. That's really the real issue, is how you're going to monetize it moving forward. One other question that's kind of popped up recently, Pete, is that players, I guess, opting out of bowl games. And, does that impact the future of college football? We know about McCaffrey. We know about Leonard Fournette. Both guys, kind of bounced out of playing in that bowl game. Do you think that's going to hurt college football? And do you think that that's going to hurt the bowls? And will that be something that maybe drives the four-team expansion to some other big number in the playoff?
I don't think that is going to have that drastic of effect. But there will be, and I'm actually writing a column about this today or tomorrow, and actually saw Brian Kelly at the draft, and I'm going to quote him about it, so your listeners may want to read it. Ultimately, this draft changed the paradigm for playing in bowl games. And forever changed it. It is what it is. And so now what you're going to be dealing with is how much has it changed it? That's really the biggest question. I can't see it becoming that drastic. Foster's Farm Bowl, you're nervous that the marquee attraction, the best player, or you're one of these smaller bowls, and ultimately those games are star-driven. There's a much more realistic chance now than there was, say, a year ago, that the best players aren't going to play in those games.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be the future of it, unfortunately. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the lesser bowls because of it and where it all ends up. Pete, we've taken enough of your time. If people want to follow you on Twitter, how can they do that?
So I believe my Twitter handle is @SIPeteThamel.
Okay. All right, Pete, thanks so much for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate it. And if you guys want to check out his work, go to sportsillustrated.com. You can find all of his content there. Thanks for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys, having me.
All right, folks, that's going to be it for the show. Hope you enjoyed that. We will be back next week on Power Hour. We're going to have a Temple expert come on and talk about what to expect from them in that opening game and how their spring practice went. Want to mention once again, if you want to check out irishsportsdaily.com, you can go to the front page there and click on subscribe, or you can go to the Huddle, which is our free forum, sign up and ask us any questions you may have, and we'll do our best to answer those questions. Once again, if you want to email the show, you have any comments, questions, or want to know about advertising, you can email me at mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. That's going to be it for the show this week. Also, we'll have a Thursday podcast that will involve recruiting. I think we're going to have Jamian Franklin joining us for the show on Thursday, so that'll be exciting. And then Christian will come on, talk a little recruiting as well. It's just going to be a half-hour podcast that we're going to do on recruiting moving forward. I'm not sure it'll be every week. It just depends on how quickly we can get interviews up and all that kind of stuff. But be looking for that, an extra podcast that'll come out on Thursday. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon on Power Hour.
This has been Power Hour, an exclusive production of irishsportsdaily.com. To find more on the Fighting Irish and to sign up for a premium subscription, visit irishsportsdaily.com today. And to listen to archived shows, visit iTunes and search for Notre Dame Power Hour.